Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
True crime, unsolved cases, strange disappearances. Join me as we travel through the timeline of some of the darkest acts in human history. I'm your host, Kevin Eustace, and welcome to the third season of The Deadly Countdown. Episode 1, Juan Corona, the Orchard Reaper.
A man convicted of killing and mutilating 25 men has died in prison of natural causes. Juan Vallejo Corona died Monday in an outside hospital, according to California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation officials. The farm labor contractor was convicted of killing and mutilating 25 farm workers using a meat cleaver, machete, double-bladed axe, and wooden club. For a time, it was the deadliest rampage in U.S. history.
What you've just heard right there was CBS 13's obituary, if you will, of the mass murderer Juan Corona by Matt Yoris. In a style that repeats itself in these types of cases, we find a man who found himself in control of desperate people, looking to do desperate things simply to keep their head above water. What they didn't know was the boss they were trying to impress was also wiping out his workforce one by one and burying them within the peach orchards. But before we begin Season 3 and take a deep dive into Juan Corona, welcome to Season 3 of The Deadly Countdown. As we alluded to in Season 2, Season 3 onwards will be slightly different. Namely, I will be integrating myself more with the podcast. In the truest sense, evolution is the name of the game when it comes to podcasting, and I've took on board all of the feedback I've received, and yes, seasons 1 and 2 were heavily scripted. However, in my defense, that's to be expected when you're dipping your toe into a podcast genre you've never released a podcast in before. You specifically want to get dates, times, events correct. However, why I listen to podcasts is because I feel a bond with the podcaster. I feel like I'm putting on a friend. I feel like I have someone in the background, maybe not to talk to, but at least someone who's there talking to me, getting me through the day. And that's what we're going to try and inject into the Deadly Countdown moving forward. Because, believe it or not, I'm also a human being, I have emotions, I have thoughts on certain topics, especially on certain crimes, and I think it would do the podcast good to have a conversation, even a one-way one, so that we can have a little bit of a breakup from a formulated script. And believe me, that does not mean in any way, shape or form that we degenerate or we take anything away from the severity, seriousness, or trauma attached to any of these crimes. It's simply a case of, over the next few seasons, we'll get to know each other a bit better. You'll get to know a bit about me, and hopefully I'll learn more about you. So I'll begin. I'm Kev Eustace, I'm 44 years old, I'm in a long-term relationship with my partner Becca, we have one cat named Sienna, or the neighbour's cat, as we like to nickname her. As a sidebar, that started when we was not allowed to have a pet in the flat, so we had to pretend it was the neighbour's cat. And she truly is the apple of my eye. And if my partner has that, I'll probably have a black eye to go with the apple. And now it's your turn. Remember, this is your show. So if you have any suggestions for future crimes, or any suggestions at all, you can email us at thedeadlycountdown@gmail.com. Before we take a look at Juan Corona and his horrendous crimes, I need to remind you all about our wonderful Patreon campaign. Over on Patreon, you can receive early released ad-free episodes each and every week, as well as bi-weekly Patreon-only podcasts, Cold Case. On Cold Case, we take a look at some of the most famous unsolved cases in history. And we've covered some of the most famous ones already, such as the Black Dahlia, D.B. Cooper, the Dialetov Pass incident. So if that's your cup of tea, so to speak, head over to patreon.com/thedeadlycountdown. We've had some sign-ups over the break, but we'll hang on until we get a few more and we'll do a big shout-out towards one of the future episodes. But now we've got our stall set out for the upcoming seasons, for Juan Corona, the Orchard Reaper, let's start the clock. Juan Corona, the Orchard Killer. A story etched in the Californian history of crime, where sunny orchards became synonymous with unspeakable crimes and buried secrets. As always, we'll be serious about the facts, but we won't shy away from stepping into the more uncomfortable, curious corners of our minds. We are about to embark on a journey through the life, crimes, and conviction of a man whose story is as complex as it is horrifying. Buckle up, because this isn't going to be easy, pleasant, or nice. For this episode, I scoured online, I listened to podcasts aplenty, I went through images of dusty newspaper clippings, yellowed court documents all online, anything to try and grasp the enormity of the case. It's one thing to hear the facts, but it's another to see those victims' names in print, to read the cold reporting of how their lives were snatched away. It's a sobering reminder, and one we should recall for each and every episode, that behind every true crime podcast, there are real people, real tragedies, futures, hopes, dreams, destroyed on the whim of another human being. In this case, their boss. You could sincerely go crazy, thinking just how little we truly know about those we think we know. Not only that, but the depths of depravity they may be capable of. Behind their daily morning routine of smiling at you as they walk past with a cup of coffee. Juan Corona was born on February the 7th, 1934, in Jalisco, Mexico. He was one of the many children that were brought up in a family struggling to make ends meet, amidst the rural poverty that plagued much of Mexico that time. Corona's life was marked by hardship, labour, lack of opportunities, factors that shape anyone. And there are so many tales of woe regarding people brought up in that circumstance, but they don't all lead where Corona's did. Growing up, Corona witnessed the harsh realities of agrarian life, with his family moving from place to place in search of work. And it's in these early years that the seeds of an unfathomable future were possibly sown. Psychologists often talk about the impact of instability and poverty on young minds, suggesting that these are pivotal points, and they might steer a person down various paths. For Corona, could these have been the early signposts that pointed to his later actions? Well, it's speculative, but worth pondering. As for schooling, well, there's little to say. Education was a luxury that Corona, like many in his situation, simply couldn't afford. Instead, his formative years were spent learning the brutal curriculum of survival in the agricultural underbelly of America. And that is a harsh teacher. One that leaves indelible marks on its pupils. But concrete evidence is thin. Did these experiences shape the monster he would become? Or are they just tragic footnotes? This is part of the chilling puzzle that we will wrestle with. But one thing is definitely for sure. Corona's life was no stranger to turmoil. Frequent migrations between Mexico and the US, seeking better life as a farm worker, would have been incredibly stressful. Combine that with his marriage of 7 years falling apart, leaving Corona to navigate the complexities of life and his struggles with mental illness, such as psychotic episodes that landed him in institutions throughout the 50s, well, you can see where the cracks start to form. His life, particularly the breakup of his marriage, is often pointed to as a significant stressor that may well have exacerbated underlying issues. After the separation, Corona became increasingly isolated. A detail that true crime aficionados such as yourselves will recognize as a common thread among many who turn to the dark side. But let's not oversimplify this. Human minds are mazes, and Corona's was certainly no exception. The mid-60s marked a turning point in Juan Corona's life, one characterized by the onset of severe mental health issues. In 69, Corona was hospitalized for acute schizophrenia, a condition that profoundly impacts your perception of reality, blurring the lines between what's real and what's imagined. This period of hospitalization is a critical chapter in our story, as it introduces a significant factor that may have influenced his later actions. You see, schizophrenia is a complex and often misunderstood condition, characterized by symptoms such as delusions, hallucinations, and disorganized thinking. For Corona, these symptoms manifested themselves in a belief that everyone around him was conspiring against him, a paranoia that would further isolate him from the world. It's actually quite a poignant reminder of the role that mental health plays in our lives, and I guess the catastrophic consequences if left untreated or inadequately addressed. After his release from hospital, there were few, if any, indications that Corona received ongoing support or any treatment to manage his condition. The stigma surrounding, and arguably still surrounding, mental health, but especially in the mid-20th century, likely contributed to this neglect. This lack of support and understanding from the community, and perhaps his own denial of the severity of his condition, propelled Corona towards a path from which there was literally no return. In the years following his divorce, Corona's family ties remained strained. There was little in the way of support or connection, leaving him to drift further and further from any anchor to a normative life. It's here, in this isolation, that some believe the groundwork was laid for the heinous act to come. I think it's an important point right now to establish that we are not trying to make excuses for the behavior of Juan Corona. What we are trying to do is understand the human condition. Why did this person who was born from a mother and father like all of us, end up as a serial killer? Is it nature? Is it nurture? We may never truly know, but we do know the impact that a supportive family network can have to a positive effect. Therefore, we realistically should take it as tacit that if that's not there, if that's literally quite the opposite, then the opposite should be true. Sutter County, California. This becomes Corona's hunting ground in the 1970s. As a labor contractor, he has ready access to vulnerable young men, young migrants, desperate for work, ready to fall into his trap. At first, the disappearances are dismissed, maybe transient workers moving on. But soon, the horrifying truth comes to light. I genuinely cannot fathom the chilling realization that must have settled over that workspace, over that region. Guys you knew, guys you worked with, suddenly gone. Suspicion must have been everywhere. Every interaction tense. Every job offer laced with an unspoken fear. Especially for a migrant worker who has no other source of income. I can't think of many people who enjoy their job, but I don't know anyone who's afraid to go to work for fear they may be killed.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
In 1971, a farmer's plow unearths a body in his peach orchard. This isn't an accident, but the first piece of a monstrous puzzle. More bodies surface, bearing ghastly signs of slashing wounds, brutal beatings. It's now becoming clear. A predator is stalking the orchards, turning places of life into literal graveyards. Between 1970 and 1971, the tranquility of Northern California was shattered by a series of horrifying discoveries. 25 men, all farm laborers, were found brutally murdered and buried in shallow graves along Feather River near Yuba City, Marysville. The victims? Predominantly migrant workers. A detail that initially slowed the investigation due to their transient nature. Juan Corona, who had by then become a labor contractor, responsible for hiring seasonal workers, was at the center of this storm. The connections between the victims and Corona's role in the community raised early suspicions. It was a puzzle that began to come together in the most sinister way possible. The methodical nature of the killings and the attempts to conceal the bodies suggested a level of premeditation and organization that chilled those investigating the case. Every victim had been brutally attacked. There was evidence of slashing, stabbing, and blunt force trauma. Let's not sugarcoat this at all. This violence is barbaric, it's horrific. Some of the victims were stabbed repeatedly, others bludgeoned repeatedly. There's speculation he'd stalk them, chase them down through the fields. Imagine the terror, not just of the death, but the sheer cruelty that preceded it. Newspaper articles from the time describe the frantic search, the fear gripping the community, and through this horror, Juan Corona's name keeps cropping up. He'd worked with many of the victims. He'd been the one that placed them on these job assignments that would turn out to be the last. Investigators acted swiftly, building a damning case. Witnesses kept placing him with the disappeared men. A bloody pickaxe was found, like some gruesome calling card. It turns out Corona even kept an actual ledger. Dates, names, all coinciding with the vanishings. It was the most damning evidence, proof of his twisted premeditation. Imagine being the cop reading those ledgers. Dates of deaths meticulously listed. Chilling doesn't even cover it. You start to wonder, was this guy always a time bomb waiting to explode? How many nets had he slipped through to get to this point? Or was there a moment things just tipped him over the edge? We'll never know for sure. Maybe that's even scarier. The million-dollar question, what led him to this? Robbery is a factor, but it does not explain the savagery. Newspapers from the time hinted at a sexual motive. Twisted desires preying on men he perceived as powerless. Some experts theorized that repressed homosexuality fueled a rage that exploded in the worst possible way. The investigation into Corona revealed a man living a double life. By day, a respected business and family man. By night, a predator, stalking his prey with chilling, premeditated efficiency. But the question on everyone's mind was, why? What drives a man to commit such heinous acts amongst those who are the most vulnerable? Some theories point to Corona's mental health issues, suggesting that his actions were the result of untreated schizophrenia, which can lead to violent behaviour if not properly managed. And that could well be the case. Others speculate his crimes were driven by deep-seated anger and resentment towards the migrant community. Perhaps a reflection of his own struggles and frustrations with his past. However, these theories only skim the surface of understanding the complexity of human psychology and its capacity for evil. Look, I can't climb into Corona's head, and honestly, I wouldn't want to if I could. But that mix of sadism and self-loathing, it's a disturbing recipe for violence, especially when there's power dynamics involved, and especially when his victims are tragically easy targets. Juan Corona's reign of terror came to an end in May 1971, bringing his arrest, and initially with that arrest, Corona appeared calm. He denied everything. But that facade crumbled as witnesses and indisputable bloody evidence piled up. His 1973 trial was a national spectacle. reporters descended, accurately painting a picture of a man who had seamlessly blended into the community, all the while harboring dark secrets. In January 73, Corona was found guilty of all 25 murders and sentenced to 25 consecutive life sentences. The courtroom crackled with tension. The grisly details of his crimes, his calculated exploitation of his victims, it's harrowing stuff. But here's where things get frustrating. News articles painted Corona as emotionless in court, whilst the defence paints a picture of a helpless man, mentally unstable. Now, was that an act, or a chilling reality of his mental detachment? It makes you think about how easily some killers could mask their monstrosity. Justice, at least temporarily, is served. The jury delivers a guilty verdict for all 25 murders. And it felt like a sliver of closure for the community and families involved. But Corona's story was far from finished. Why? Well, in a shocking turn in 1978, unbelievably, the conviction is overturned. The reason? Incompetent defence. It makes you wonder if money rather than merit sometimes steers the wheels of justice. Imagine the heartbreak for the families, their wounds brutally ripped open again. But the fight's not over. 1982 brings a retrial, a new defence team, and a new bizarre tactic. He blamed it on his brother, Natividad. Despite this desperate attempt and Corona maintaining his innocence, yet again, another guilty verdict rings out. And whilst he lingers in prison, appealing and appealing, the world forgets about him. But in Sutter County, ghosts never truly vanish. Corona died in 2019, and let's talk about that. Because at first, that feels like closure, right? But then I wonder, is that too easy? Dying an old man, not paying the true price. Part of me wishes he'd suffered more. But then wouldn't that make me just like him? It's a moral mess. News clippings list names: John Haluka, Lloyd Wallace. 25 lives cut tragically short. But let's try to see the people behind the headlines. Honour their memory. Kenneth Whittaker, only 25. He left behind a young wife. Articles hint at him being a friendly guy, always smiling. Imagine her loss, her future ripped away. There was Charles Fleming, a guy struggling with alcoholism, already marginalised, and then becoming a nameless victim of monstrous cruelty. These stories, they break my heart, because it reminds me that these brutal cases can sometimes almost take a pride of place above the fact that real people, everyday people like you or I, with families, jobs, pets, bills to pay, all that usual stuff, they are the ones who should always be front and centre. They're the ones with the loved ones who will forever carry that pain. Whilst Corona's story eventually fades into true crime obscurity, the impact remains. The migrant worker community's trust in the system was fractured, arguably only regaining any sort of closure around today. The sense of safety in those orchards is permanently poisoned. His actions cast a long, dark shadow over a place once only known for its fertile soil. This is what resonates on a deeper level. Not just the brutality, but the way he shattered a way of life. Suddenly, those seeking an honest day's wage had to look over their shoulders. Because, think about it, at some point, the rumours must have begun. The workers must have been at least suspicious. Like I said earlier, most of us don't like going to work, but we don't fear death. We may have anxiety going into work, but it's not anxiety that we may not come home. Well, there you have it. The story of Juan Corona. A chilling case that raises uncomfortable questions about human darkness, the vulnerability of marginalized groups, and the long scars left by brutal crimes. Before we go, just remember, true crime, in inverted commas, this genre we find ourselves immersed in my opinion, needs renaming, because true crime isn't entertainment. It's about honouring victims, understanding the grim corners of the world, learning about the depravity of the human mind, maybe learning something to prevent similar tragedies. So stay safe, stay vigilant, and remember, monsters like Juan Corona are rare, but sometimes, like him, they can hide in plain sight. As we close this chapter on Juan Corona, it's essential to reflect on the lessons this story teaches us. It's a grim reminder of the importance of addressing mental health, the vulnerabilities of marginalized communities, and the capacity for darkness within, maybe, all of us. But let's not end on a note of despair. Let's honour those lost in this horrific story as a catalyst for change, to advocate for better mental health support, and to ensure that those who are most vulnerable are protected. Until next time, this has been The Deadly Countdown. Stay curious, stay vigilant, and always seek the light, even in the darkest of stories. I've been Kev Eustace, and for our Patreons, I'll speak to you on Sunday for our first installment of Season 3's Cold Case. But for now, for Juan Corona, the Orchard Reaper, let's stop the clock. Any audio used in today's show is covered by fair use, and a copy to the link of that audio is in the show notes.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.